strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
One of the coolest nights I got to spend, a buddy of mine, Shem, who was in Toto for a few years. He was a member of Toto. And Toto was playing with Pat Benatar. And I got to go hang out with them backstage. It was like reliving your childhood. It was the coolest thing I'd ever done. It was so much fun. Anyway, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with us. I talked about this topic earlier today, and I started with housing and how the build-to-rent market, the build-to-rent industry, is bigger in Arizona, is bigger in the Valley than anywhere else in the country. Number two is Dallas-Fort Worth. Now, if you've not been to Dallas-Fort Worth, I will tell you, going back in time, when I was traveling to Dallas-Fort Worth in that area, I was staying in a part of town, Las Colinas is what it's called. And it's kind of that area is similar to us where you could be working in Tempe and staying in Mesa and you can't tell much of a difference between the two and cross over into Phoenix for lunch. It's basically the same thing. And I was staying in Las Colinas and working in Las Colinas when I was doing the radio and television stuff with Glenn Beck. And I used to say back then that I love the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It just seems like they have a bigger middle class than we have. Nicer condos, a couple of years newer in cars. People are dressed a little nicer. Restaurants are a little nicer. But they had a bigger middle class, that I wish Arizona had a bigger middle class. And we do. We do now. We have made dramatic changes. And for us to be number one and DFW to be number two in this area shows the great strides our economy is making. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean it isn't, you know, that there aren't people lagging and falling behind. But that's what we're seeing in growth. But there's also another headline, food deserts. Grocers leaving in droves, and it is in cities with policies that are fostering more homelessness, more drug overdoses, more drug addiction because they're ignoring the problem. The idea that you are going to say to someone, and I'm not talking about someone that, you know, goes to the dispensary and gets a couple of edibles, and I'm not, it's like saying to someone that goes out and has a couple of drinks. There is a difference between someone who drinks and someone who's an addict, someone that is an alcoholic. But we are looking at people that are on the streets many times because of their mental health issues coupled with drug abuse, or they're covering up their mental illness with drug abuse, and they become severe addicts. And they decriminalize these things, and there's open street drug use, and there's needles and paraphernalia all over the place. People are dying. San Francisco has set a record in 2023 for overdoses. We know that fentanyl is killing people. My point is, there is a way that if you have bad policy, it is going to take your city and take neighborhoods in your city down. You look at the businesses that were begging for help in the zone here in Phoenix, and they finally got it. You have to have an atmosphere in which you can do business. If not, the businesses will leave, and then more of the problem takes over. So homelessness connected to, and there's many levels of why it's happening. I'm speaking specifically now as it's connected to addiction. If you have parts of town where people are supporting their habits by committing crimes, they're burglarizing buildings, organized retail theft is different than this, but you have people that are supporting their drug habit, their addiction, by committing crimes, whether it's burglaries when the businesses are closed or shoplifting while they're open. You've got people sleeping out in front of the grocery stores. No, not the good citizens don't want to go in because they're being accosted by people that are high, that maybe under normal circumstances wouldn't behave the way they are. But when they're high or drunk or both, they're aggressive and they don't want to deal with it. So they go to grocery shop somewhere else. And stores, not just grocery stores, but restaurants and stores close up, and you have these food deserts, this food desert where having a grocery store where you can run up the street. I've got a couple of grocery stores, both of them probably equal distant, one south, one west of me, probably about a little over a mile in both directions from my house. And I'm very fortunate. I love that. I love having those choices. I can get fresh produce. I can get everything I want, everything I need for my house in a very convenient way. And it's good for the neighborhood. That's one of the things as people move into neighborhoods. I don't have kids anymore. But, you know, if you've got a family, you look at the school district. What are the schools like in this area? You know, what's the crime rate in the area? You look for conveniences like restaurants. Are we close to where I'm fairly close to Desert Ridge? I've got restaurants available if I want them. You've got all the stuff you need. Grocery stores are close by. Those all matter when you go into a neighborhood. Now imagine when there is decline in those neighborhoods and the grocery stores are not making any money because people are robbing and stealing. So the grocery chain or the grocer says, I'm done. I'm out. If you look in California, in LA County, last year, the 7-Eleven Corporation recommended that their franchisees close up shop and leave because they were losing so much money due to theft. San Francisco's had multiple businesses and restaurants and iconic places closed down because of what's happened. So you look at what we're doing here in Arizona, and we are seeing massive growth. We've got people coming here, and we are seeing a safe society for the most part. There are issues, of course, but we are seeing a difference, and we are dealing with the problem in a different way. Partnership with the City of Phoenix and St. Vincent de Paul on transitional housing for people that want help getting back on their feet. Programs that people that are in danger of losing their house or home, whether it's an apartment, whatever it is, that they're in danger of losing it, are being kept in temporarily until they can get back on their feet. These are programs that help prevent. So you look at the growth we have here. It's not by accident. It's not going to continue by accident. It's going to be something we have to work on. As it relates to people that are already on the street, we have got to do something in our country about addiction. And, you know, you can lock an addict up. You can even dry them out. You can put them away until they're clean. But if they're not going to stay clean, if they don't have the tools or the will to stay clean, I think we need to treat addiction as a disease. But you've also got to send the message to people, and I think it's an important part for their recovery and for the good of society. If you're going to say to people, we are going to help you with your addiction, you also have to say to them, but you're going to pay a price for the crime you committed. That doesn't, you know, you overcome your addiction, it doesn't mean the scars you leave behind on other people don't matter. When you have traumatized people with your behavior, when you have committed a crime against somebody in the need to fill your addiction, you need to live with that. You need to realize that the other person that you committed this act on is living with that for the rest of their life. And it's something you're going to have to live with as well. And should. I think that's an important thing. But if you look in the two extremes here, one is the Valley is number one for build to rent communities. Great thing. We're growing and growing and growing. It's helping to fill that need. We've got apartments. We've got condos. Now we have communities that are being built specifically for people that are renting. It's terrific. The other extreme is you have neighborhoods, not necessarily right here in the Valley, but neighborhoods around the country where grocers are leaving. And the good people that live in those working class neighborhoods are driving miles to get to a grocery store because the bad element is not being cleaned up. We're not making arrests when people commit crimes. We're not getting people help when they are having when they're addicted. We're not doing those things. We have to do both. And I think that's something that multifaceted approach is the best way in just about any world. It's not being myopic. And I like this. I think it's a great thing. All right, coming up in a moment, we're going to get you caught up on the biggest news stories of the day. Every day we do it at 11:20. It's a segment we call Did You Hear This? We'll do it coming up in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get caught up on the biggest news stories. We call it, Did You Hear This?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays joined the show to discuss the situation regarding how the Arizona Commerce Authority may be in violation of the state's gift clause.
What's not okay under the Constitution is using taxpayer dollars to give to out-of-state CEOs in the form of Super Bowl tickets. That's not okay under the gift clause.
Does the Arizona Commerce Authority need to make reforms?
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know enough about what they've done. The opinion of the Attorney General, and you know how much I respect her, the opinion of the Attorney General is that they have not been able to establish that there was any real benefit from the state to the state from doing this. And I think that's an important point, because where I would disagree is in my business. I separate business from public here, government. I'm talking about the use of the money. In my business, could I say I got a job directly because I took a general contractor to play golf or out to dinner? No, I can't say that they hired me because I did that. But can I say that the relationship that I established while doing those things played a role in them trusting me and giving me work? Absolutely. There's a reason why, as a private individual, you can deduct client meals. At least, I think it's 50% is the number. I'm not a tax accountant. But you can deduct meals with clients as a business expense, at least partially, because it does add to the quality of the business. That's where the question lies here. I don't know if this needs to be revamped, but I will tell you that there are people that I know and respect in the legislature that say that there are reforms that are needed, that it is an organization where they do great things, but there are some things they need to change. We'll see how it looks when they're done.
Yesterday was the first time Gilbert Police Chief Michael Solberg answered questions publicly addressing the Gilbert goons and teen violence in the East Valley. Chief Solberg says they have been open with the community.
We've been sharing information. We've been answering all of the questions that you have provided. Some of the connections you want us to make, I can't make those connections yet. We're still doing those investigations. But we have been responsive to the community, to their questions. I understand, as I mentioned in the beginning, people want to hear from me, and that's why I'm here today.
Is Gilbert Police doing enough to quell the fears of the community?
Are they doing enough now? Yes. Were they doing enough a month ago? I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know. And you know, I hate being critical of law enforcement, but if it's warranted, I will. What happened in Uvalde, which is not close to this, what happened in Uvalde was a complete meltdown and failure of public safety, and it needed to be changed. If they made mistakes, then we should figure out what those mistakes are. They should admit those mistakes, and they should change whatever happened that kept them from doing their jobs. I do think they're doing enough now. I think there's a coordinated effort between East Valley cities. I think those East Valley cities are working hard on this. They know that it's a priority, and they know that kids are in danger. And I think the parents are to be credited for getting this done, because they weren't going to sit back and be quiet. They raised their voices, and they're getting results. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at 11:20 to make sure you're caught up on the biggest headlines.
Yesterday, the Department of Justice released a report outlining the cascading failures of leadership of law enforcement during the 2022 mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland says that the most significant failure occurred when officials on scene transitioned from creating a scene as an active shooter situation and treating the shooter as a barricaded suspect.
That failure meant that law enforcement officials prioritized a protracted evacuation of students and teachers in other classrooms instead of immediately rescuing the victims trapped with the active shooter. It meant that officials spent time trying to negotiate with the subject instead of entering the room and confronting him.
Do these failures by law enforcement warrant arrests of those involved?
I don't think it warrants arrest. I don't know that you can jump to that conclusion. I will tell you that a lot of people should lose their ability to be in law enforcement and be first responders, and I don't say that lightly. The reason why we consider these men and women to be heroes is they've changed the protocol. And the protocol for an active shooter, any situation, used to be years ago that you set up a perimeter and you wait for the SWAT team or SAU or whatever you call it in your jurisdiction, and then you go in when it's safe. But now with active shooter situations, officer safety is not the first regard. They are told you enter, you engage, and you neutralize the threat. And that's not what happened here. communication had broken down. It was a failure from the top down. There's no doubt about that. And so there are got to be a lot of people, especially that have been long-term in law enforcement professionals, that have to take a look at themselves and figure out whether or not they just got lazy over the years, or if they need to do something different, because when the worst possible scenario happened, you didn't look prepared. That can't ever happen again.
Mortgage rates are slowly dropping, but not fast enough, as 2023 was the slowest year for existing home sales since 1995.
National Association of Realtors says the number fell by 18.7% from the year prior. That's the biggest year-to-year drop-off since 2007.
How is Arizona different from the national average?
Well, I think the difference here is that there are more and more people coming here, so there's a demand for housing. Our housing prices, the value of our homes, are remaining strong. We aren't seeing the bubble bursting like we saw back there in 2007, 2008. So that's a great thing. But what we are seeing is people that have those low interest rates, 3% and under in some cases, are saying, why would I leave this house that I like to go even to a house I like more, where I'm going to pay double that, probably more? That's been that's been what people were saying in 2023. I think as interest rates come to they level off, as we see some consistency in this, we don't see the volatility. I think more and more people will start making the jump. It's just a matter of time. And I think Arizona's positioned, because of the new people coming, it's keeping our property values higher. That's why we're different. Four great topics today, Julia. Good job. We'll do it again on Monday. I almost said tomorrow, but I'm not doing any of this tomorrow. What we're going to do in a moment is we're going to talk about fentanyl seizures. We're going to talk about what can be done. If you are making the plan on what we do to reduce the dangers of fentanyl and fentanyl deaths, what would you do? Because the statistics are staggering. So we're going to talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
So earlier we were talking about the continuing resolution where they're kicking the can down again in Congress so that they don't have a government shutdown, but it gives them time to negotiate a deal. We talked about this earlier, this stopgap bill that is passed. Well, one of the things that they are fighting about is what's going to happen at the border. It is about spending, but what about the border? What are the concessions that are made? And when you look at what's being proposed, in my opinion, it is unacceptable that if I were the Speaker of the House, who is a Republican, I'd want nothing to do with that border plan. More and more Americans are seeing the devastation from a border security nightmare. And that's what we have. If you've not heard me say this, I heard it clarified best a year or so ago at an event that I was at with Representative Juan Ciscomani from Southern Arizona. And he described the border as three separate issues, intertwined, interlinked, but three separate issues. One of them is border security. Another of them is immigration. And lastly is commerce and trade. Now, you can imagine how they all work together. Our problem when it comes to fentanyl, when it comes to a lot of the problems we're having, is a border security issue. Now, I will tell you, the number of people that we let in with asylum claims has to do with our immigration policy. That's an immigration policy. But when we have people coming into the country, not through ports of entry, but in other places, when you have Texas state troopers using razor wire to keep people on the other side of the Rio Grande because the federal government isn't doing anything, that is a border security issue. People coming into the country and filing false asylum claims in the numbers they are, that is an immigration issue. That is a policy issue in how we handle immigration. The fentanyl that's coming into the country is a border security issue. But what are the solutions? Because, history tends to repeat itself. I am not privileged to know the inside scoop on anything, but I am a student of history, and I watched things happen before my eyes. When I was young, I don't know why this story still makes me laugh, because I would tell you, I'm pretty honest about the things I've done in my life, stupid or otherwise. I've never used any illegal drugs. I've never smoked marijuana. I've never done any of that. I didn't have anything against it. I had a lot of friends who used a bunch of different drugs. I didn't care. I hung out with them all the time. It just was not my thing. I've never been a drug user, but I had a lot of friends who loved weed when we were kids, and they used to have a term for it. It used to be called square grouper. You may not have heard it if you're not from near the beach, but in the Gulf of Mexico where I lived, they used to truck in marijuana in big bales, like hay bales, and they'd wrap them in plastic, and they would bring them in these cigarette boats, these huge high-speed power boats, and that's how they would smuggle marijuana into the U.S., and when they would get chased, when the Coast Guard would chase these boats, they would throw the bales over the side of the boat and try to get away. And when the weed would float ashore, it was called square grouper. And they would hang they'd go take some of the weed and dry it out, as gross as that sounds, and smoke whatever. My point is, there was a time when that's what they were chasing, was marijuana. And very quickly, when cocaine became something that Americans craved, it switched very quickly. It was smaller and more easily concealed and shipped. It weighed a lot less, and you got much more money per ounce than you did for weed. And all of a sudden, you had the cocaine cowboys, and those were a couple of guys in Miami that started out at the very ground floor of this, and an old redneck guy that had his pilot's license that became a multimillionaire just by flying plane loads of cocaine from Colombia and getting it into the U.S. And you watch South Florida transform, and you watch the country transform, and law enforcement dealing with an issue. We were dealing with cocaine overdoses. We were dealing with all of the medical problems, not nearly as bad as fentanyl, but the same kind of problem. But when it came to a public safety issue, people getting caught in the crossfire of gang violence, the Miami Police Department was infiltrated by cocaine dealers, where even command staff level employees of the Miami Police Department were arrested because they were involved in drug trafficking. They couldn't walk away from the good money and how big the money was. And there had to be a concerted effort from our government, local, state, and federal government, to push back. Now, obviously, we haven't solved the problem. Cocaine is still there. But the cartel issue, the Cali cartel, the Medellin cartel, these major cartels that had their own armies, were disassembled. You've got the same kind of cartels building and have been built in Mexico. And now it's fentanyl and other drugs. And instead of it being the port of Miami, instead of it being the Everglades and made up airstrips across the Everglades, it's dark places on the border in Arizona, concealed in 18-wheeler trucks, concealed in cars, concealed on people, coming through the ports of entry. In Arizona, we are the Miami of this movement now. And so our local law enforcement, our state law enforcement, have been overwhelmed by this problem. But what can be done? The state of Arizona, our governor can't, which I guess she could, but you can't make a deal on behalf of the United States with Mexico. You could have a conversation, you could build rapport, but you've got to be able to let them know, you know, the USMCA, I keep bringing this up, we have a negotiated deal better than NAFTA, better for the U.S., better for our neighbors to the north and south. But in order for it to work, all three nations have to be working well. And Mexico needs to be free. Mexico needs to be thriving. It needs to be prosperous, and it needs to be safe. And right now it isn't. Can we convince Mexico to do what can be done on their end on the production and the shipping of fentanyl? Now, the president of Mexico has already said, if America doesn't want fentanyl in its country, stop the appetite in America. And he's got a point. He absolutely has a point. We have got to stop the appetite for this drug. How? You know, what do we do as a nation? But that doesn't condone what's happening at the border. We should be doubling down even more. If the number one killer of young people in this country is fentanyl, and the vast majority of the fentanyl that comes into this country is coming through the southern border of the United States, why aren't we doing something to stop the port of entry? Not the real legitimate ports of entry, but the points of entry, where they're bringing it across and how they're bringing it across. Why are we not saying we're going to save the lives of the young people in this country, and we're going to start by making access to fentanyl a lot less easy, a lot less simple? And that's one way to start addressing this on our end. Drug treatment and drug prevention, all of those things are important. That's absolutely, we're always going to have an element among us. There is always going to be an element among us that's going to experiment with and eventually become addicted to drugs. It's still going to kill people. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in. But we shouldn't have it to the extent we do. And the federal government isn't doing its job. So someone, our leaders in our country, need to negotiate with Mexico. What can they do? How do we stop China from sending some of the chemicals used to make fentanyl that are only used to make fentanyl? How do we reduce the amount of that? We were told we have an agreement in place with them, but how is it being enforced? We're going to be political and we're going to be economic adversaries with China, but we shouldn't be killing each other's citizens with this poison. What can we do to fight, literally fight the cartels for power? Shutting off their revenue stream at the border, changing the system so that they don't have the loophole that's being used for asylum. That's the immigration piece of it. But they're also using the overwhelmed people from CBP and Border Patrol being distracted by these people seeking asylum. And so then while they're forced to do that, they're using their drug trade and finding avenues to get their drugs through. That's what they're doing. They are an organized, well-oiled machine that we have to make a concerted effort to push back on. And I don't see this administration doing that, or at least not doing anywhere near enough of it. The number one killer of young people is fentanyl, and the majority of fentanyl that was caught and taken off the streets in this country last year was taken off the streets of Arizona. We all should be screaming about that. All right, before we close it out, we're going to go back. I had a conversation with the Attorney General. Yesterday, we talked with the head of the Chamber of Commerce, CEO of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in the state of Arizona, on the topic of the Arizona Commerce Authority. We had the Attorney General and her opinion today. We're going to talk about what she had to say and where I fall on the issue next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. A few minutes left in the show. A conversation today with the Attorney General, and I want to thank Chris Mays for joining us. Word came out that the Arizona Commerce Authority, they're up for review because the program is possibly going to sunset. Now, members of the state legislature, let me preface it with this. Senator Jake Hoffman from Queen Creek says it doesn't mean that some of these critical functions the ACA does will go away. But they are saying that part of this sunset review is that they believe that the panel says the authority must revise and consolidate. Hoffman said the audit found gross mismanagement and negligence, even outright alleged illegal activity. He also made publicized his bill to kill off the agency, but he suggested on Wednesday that any revision that might result from the legislative deliberations would be amended to his repeal bill, Senate Bill 1040. The Attorney General, Chris Mays, was on the show to talk about this because she believes some of the behavior of the ACA, or the Arizona Commerce Authority, violated the gift clause of the Constitution. So let me say this about both sides for a moment. I don't think Chris Mays wants to destroy growth in Arizona. And I also don't believe that members of the Commerce Authority are out there trying to just waste taxpayer money. I think they've done a great job in enticing industry here. I think having a Commerce Authority shows the business community nationally and internationally, TSMC, that we are serious about business growth and hearing what business leaders want and then doing what we can to protect the citizens of Arizona, but at the same time have industrial growth in our state. Number one in manufacturing growth in the country. That is an amazing statistic. But are there things that they did that violated the gift clause? So it is what she said, that this is a constitutional violation.
Using taxpayer dollars to give to out-of-state CEOs in the form of Super Bowl tickets and lavish parties and Waste Management Open tickets and steak dinners and rooms at the Biltmore, including wives and friends, that's not okay. under the gift clause. And we did the analysis. We did a four-month-long investigation after this was referred to us by the Auditor General and found that this kind of spending by the ACA does violate that gift clause.
So the clarification is, as she talked about the test under the gift clause, the main question is, are you able to show that the money that you are spending is having a direct benefit to the state? If not, it violates the gift clause. Now, I'm simplifying that, but that's basically how it is. So can you show that by bringing CEOs out here when they're already coming? CEOs are here for the WM Phoenix Open, or they're out here for the Super Bowl or the Final Four or the Fiesta Bowl or anything else we put on out here where people are coming here, or we bring them out, one or the other. And we sit them down, we show them around, this is what we have to offer, this is what we are, this is what everybody's doing. Can you show a direct benefit to the state? If you can't, it violates the gift clause. So this is what that's how she describes that main test I just described to you.
Is there a public benefit? And I found that there is a public benefit to this kind of economic development efforts. But then the second part of that test is critical, Mike. It says a gift clause in the Constitution says that there must be proportionality between the taxpayer funding that is given to a private entity and the benefit that we get.
So this is what's so hard about this. And let me explain. You've got staunch Republicans like Jake Hoffman saying that he's got a repeal bill, but he's also saying if they make changes, if they consolidate, then I'll make sure that goes into the bill. But this is what we want in this. This is a guy on the right side of the aisle, pretty far to the right on the right side of the aisle. You've got Chris Mayes, who is a Democrat. And the political party only matters because we elect them to political offices. But she does not see eye to eye ideologically with Jake Hoffman. But they agree on this issue. What's interesting about that, to add another wrinkle to it, is our governor, who is a staunch Democrat, disagrees with the attorney general, saying this is an important part of economic growth to the state of Arizona. So this is, again, a matter of opinion. Do you think that the Arizona Commerce Authority is enticing industry? Do you think that the massive growth that we've had, especially in the last 10 years, do you think that that massive growth we've had here in the state of Arizona can be attributed in part to the Arizona Commerce Authority and its members? That's a great question. And I think that question is going to be answered at some point by a judge. I love the work that they do. I think they do a great job. Are there places they need to change and rein it in? I guess we're going to find out. And that's going to be the update. So a big thank you to the Attorney General. Please go to KTAR.com or download the podcast. It'll be available on the podcast. Hear the entire interview and listen to Danny Seidens from yesterday, because you'll get both views and kind of figure out which side you fall on. We'll be back tomorrow morning. The show starts at just about 8 a.m. Thank you for listening today for part of your day. We'll be back tomorrow. God bless.